right, folks. Can you hear me okay? Carlos? I don't know. Are the speakers on? I think so. Can everybody hear me okay? No, I have a loud voice, but it sounds like folks online can hear us just fine. So at 6 o'clock, out of everybody's respect, we're going to go ahead and get started. As folks move in, we'll go ahead and have them get seated. So thank you for coming for the second neighborhood meeting for the property owners' proposed applications for the project on the southeast corner of Tangerine Road and La Cholla Boulevard. Got a pretty good crowd today. Something new that we've started as of last night is we've also got a hybrid meeting here, so we've got folks joining us online as well. So we've got about, at the moment, 12 folks on Zoom, so those folks can watch the presentation and actually we'll be able to ask questions as well. So bear with us as we're going through that to try and be able to accommodate those folks as well. For those of you who weren't here at the first neighborhood meeting, my name is Michael Spaeth. I'm a current planning principal planner with the town of Oro Valley. I'm going to be tonight's meeting facilitator, but I'm also the town's primary staff reviewer of the property owner's proposed application. So I'm kind of got two hats on. As a facilitator, my first goal is to make sure that we have a fair and efficient meeting and that I am neutral. I want everybody to feel like they've had their voice heard, had an opportunity to ask any questions or comments or state your opinions on the project if you have those. So for just to start, couple of ground rules. They were a handout on the sign-in table. Hopefully everybody grabbed them. They're also reflected on the screen up here. Essentially what it boils down to is we just want everybody to be respectful. Be respectful of each other, be respectful of staff and of the applicant. That way we can continue or make sure that we have a fair and efficient meeting. For those of us in person, can you please make sure to silence your cell phones if you haven't already? I know I often forget to do that. For those of you who aren't familiar with the town campus, right outside the doors you came in to the right, we have restrooms and drinking fountains. So if you need those throughout the meeting, please don't hesitate to make use of those. For those of you on Zoom, your microphones are going to be muted until we get to the question and answer period. And if you've raised your hand, we'll go ahead and unmute you. And we will have additional information during my presentation on how to do that if you're unfamiliar with Zoom. So can I see a hands of folks here in the audience who you received a yellow postcard for tonight's meeting? Good, okay. So about two-thirds of you. So if you didn't receive a yellow postcard and do want to stay involved and noticed of upcoming meetings moving forward, the fact that you signed in for us tonight is going to make sure that you're added to that notification list. So as these applications move forward in the review process, you will be notified of all of those upcoming meetings. If you're not familiar with ovprojects.com, I encourage all of you to go there and bookmark it. This project has its own webpage on there where we will upload all of the revised documents and new information that the applicant provides as we get it. So that's the best resource you can have, aside to coming from meetings, to stay up to date on the project. So please bookmark that if you haven't already. Our meeting is scheduled to go until 7:30 tonight. But of course, as usual, the applicant and town staff are more than happy to wait around and answer more questions if there are still remaining questions by that time. So just to bring everybody up to speed, we have received a formal submittal from the application So we've been working with the applicant on achieving code compliance, and now we're having this meeting tonight to give the applicant an opportunity to present their revised submittal and essentially go through and show how they've addressed the comments and questions that we had during the first neighborhood meeting back in April. I'd like to remind folks again that this is the property owner's request. It is not the town's request. We do have to do due diligence on an application, but it is the property owner's job to seek, create, and justify approval from the Planning and Zoning Commission and Council. So just to make that clear. So where are we in the process? Well, actually, we'll do tonight's agenda first. So first off, I'm going to go through in a brief presentation and talk about opportunities for folks to stay involved moving forward. Then I'll do a brief overview of the applicant's proposal, and then we'll turn it over to the applicant and let him get into a little bit more detail and depth on their revised plan. And then we'll turn it over to you. And again, that's the most important part of the process. And as I stated before, we do have some folks on Zoom, so we are going to be bouncing back and forth to make sure those folks have an opportunity to be heard. So again, appreciate your patience with that. And then lastly, I'll go through a summary of what the next steps are, and so folks can kind of get an idea of where we are in the process. And so for that, of course, we had the first neighborhood meeting back in April, which hopefully many of you attended. Again, we did get that formal submittal, and of course, tonight we're at the second neighborhood meeting. So following this meeting, the applications that the applicant is proposing do require two meetings before the Planning and Zoning Commission and then one before Town Council. So those are scheduled, as you can see on screen, for October, November, and December. And those are public hearings as well. So we'll send notices out for all those meetings, and everybody can come who wants to have comments or questions be answered or give their opinion on the project. So those are additional opportunities for folks to stay involved on the project. So for those of you who aren't familiar with the property, I've shown it here on this map. It's outlined in blue. It's about 11 and a half acres on the southeast corner of Tangerine and La Cholla Boulevard. Of course, to the south and to the east, you can see it's bordered by Rancho de Cobre subdivision. To the west, there's vacant land owned by the state land department, and then south of that is Rancho del Cobre, and to the north, there are some vacant commercial pieces. With respect to the applicant's proposal, there are two requests being pursued. The first is a Type 1 general plan amendment from neighborhood commercial office to high-density residential, and that request is asked for to justify the second application, which is a rezoning from neighborhood commercial office to R6. The rezoning is intended to allow for the development of 90 detached and attached single-family dwellings. That subdivision also has two access points, one off Tangerine and one off of La Cholla, and again, there will be a mix of one and two stories. And again, the applicant will go into much further detail during their presentation. With respect to that first application, the general plan amendment, I said they're changing it from neighborhood commercial office to high-density residential, as you can see on the image on the right. Just to give some background, the subject property is surrounded by low-density residential to the south and east, neighborhood commercial office, and medium-density residential to the west, and then some commercial office and public semi-public to the north. With regard to the zoning application, again, it's from CN or neighborhood commercial to R6, which is a multifamily zoning district shown on the right-hand image. Again, you can see to the south that the Rancho de Cobre subdivision is zoned R120. The Rancho de Plata subdivision is R17. To the west and northwest, you've got some larger lot zoning districts in R1144. And then in the C1 and CN districts to the north, those are commercial zoning districts. So just wanted to add some context to where these two applications fall into what's out there today. So as I did mention, of course, this is the second neighborhood meeting. So I've provided the concept plan kind of in the middle of the screen that was discussed at that meeting. And then there's the new one proposed tonight by the applicant. I've also provided just kind of a general list. Of course, this isn't holistic, but these were the primary issues and topics that were discussed during that meeting. So we've asked the applicant to address these during his presentation tonight. And of course, if there are others that come up, feel free to ask those and we'll ask him to address those as well. So with that, I'll turn it over to the applicant, Mr. Paul Oland.
Thank you, Mr. Spaeth. Can everybody hear me on this microphone? Okay, excellent. So as Mr. Spaeth mentioned, my name is Paul Oland. I am representing the property owner and the developer. JLM Living is the developer. Property owner is actually the same group that owned the Rancho del Cobre subdivision, who sold that to Maricay back when that happened. So same group owned the entire piece. This is just the part that's left over that was held back for more intense land use. Just real quick, I wanted to go through the... That's better. I can see the screen. wanted to go through the site plan here. The one that was up on the screen a moment ago showed what we had proposed before, before we made the application when we were in the pre-application stage. This is what we've actually applied to build. Same size, obviously, about 11.5 acres. We do have 90 units proposed, which is I think we had 87 on the last one, something like that. Pretty similar. Basically, what we've done is reformat some of these areas here. Did a little bit of adjustments to the actual units, the footprints of those. As the architect makes adjustments, those have flexed a little bit, so they've had to move around a little bit. It is a mix of 1, 2, and 3 bedroom units, and it's a mix of 1 and 2 story units as well. Max height on the 2 story units is 25 feet, which is the same as what's currently on there in the neighborhood commercial zoning district. We've got, as Mr. Spaeth mentioned, we've got 2 access points here. One up here off of Tangerine. If you can picture it, there's a left turn bay right up here that currently goes down into basically a stub out. So we'll be connecting in right there. And of course, continuing the multi-use path, we'll reconfigure that a little bit to make a good crossing there. The southern access point is probably the largest change since the last site plan that you guys have seen. On the one before it, if you remember, the access point was further north with the leasing office clubhouse and the pool amenity south of it, closer to the neighbors there in Rancho del Cobre. So one of the things we heard at that last meeting was some concern about noise at that pool area. So we flip-flopped those two elements so that now we have the entry, which is gated, and then the rec area and pool on the north side of that, a little further away. Some of the units have garages, some don't. And one of the things that does is in addition to creating a more typical residential feel, we also reduce the amount of on-site parking that we need to provide. The town has amended their parking code with regard to this sort of development. So now there's a scale as far as how much parking needs to be provided, depending on the number of bedrooms that are in each unit. And then there's additional parking that's needed for guests and for the rec area. So this will be meeting those new standards, which are based on a bunch of research that they did to make sure that they align with the actual needs of this sort of development. And on that note, this sort of development, which is a high-quality rental unit, mostly detached, but a mix of detached and attached, it's a housing format that was really born here in Tucson a number of years ago. It gained popularity, especially among young professionals, middle-aged professionals, folks who most of the time were previous homeowners or could certainly afford to build a home, but have decided to live in a setting like this for a number of reasons, which I'll get into on a subsequent slide. So at any rate, just a couple other things on this. We'll have a heavy enhanced landscape buffer yard along the southern edge there with a continuous tree canopy and some additional understory plantings to help create a little bit more buffering there visually. We're also limiting all of the units along that southern edge to single story to help that transition there to the existing homes down there. Lighting will all be per Oro Valley's lighting code. It'll be shielded, fully shielded, compliant with all of those codes, and including the prohibition on trespass, light trespass. It's pretty tight standards there, and we'll, of course, be meeting all of those. The northwestern portion of the site, you can see, is there's no development proposed. There's a pretty good-sized wash there, which has a floodplain, but it also has some Oro Valley-mapped critical resource area there, so we'll be preserving that in its entirety. So this was a graphic that we didn't have at the last hearing or meeting, but I thought it would be helpful just to kind of overlay what was approved during the rezoning versus what we're proposing here. So on the left, obviously, is today's site plan. On the right, I've overlaid the commercial site plan that was approved when this was rezoned along with the Rancho del Cobre subdivision. Basically, there are two commercial buildings. Each of those would be the 25 feet. Then there was a drive-through use and a coffee shop right here. Access points in the same places. So, and the rest of it was parking or open space. They also preserved the wash and the floodplain up in that corner because there's really not a large enough area right on the corner up here to have any viable use. So from that standpoint, I just thought it would help to see the overlay there. Let me clear this off too. So JLM Living is a group. They're out of Texas, but they've been developing this sort of residential neighborhood in a number of states. This is the architecture from a project that they have in San Antonio, which is not entirely representative of what we'll be doing here, but the architecture is still in development for this project. But just wanted to give you a sense for it or a flavor of what their vision is. It's a mixed streetscape, a variety of architectural styles and colors and roof lines to really help break it up. Some of these developments that you see, especially around Tucson, some of the older ones, they all look very, very similar. They all look flat roof boxes. They look very tight. So these guys are trying to basically take the concept in terms of a high-quality rental subdivision, but tune up the architecture a little bit, make it a little bit more visually interesting, which will help maintain strong rents as well. So some of the concerns that we've heard at the last meeting, I think this is basically the list that was on Mr. Spaeth's slide. Commercial viability is a question. I've heard some people say basically, well, this was zoned commercial. That means it should be developed commercially, and that would provide sales tax dollars, and it would provide employment opportunities for the nearby neighborhood. Fact of the matter is there's just no commercial demand. There's no commercial demand in the foreseeable future. There was a report done for another project a little bit further east on Tangerine that's posted on the town's website. It's a fascinating report, and I would encourage anybody who's that interested to go and read it because there's a lot of good data in there. But basically, the summary statement is that Oro Valley has significantly more commercially zoned land than it will ever need. The population base just doesn't support the acreage of commercial land that exists in the town. And so the town has a choice to make. What does it want to do with the surplus? It can leave it as vacant open space, basically, which I know is the preferred option for nearby neighbors. The town, though, in their general plan, does identify growth areas. It identifies areas that are more appropriate for a little bit more intense land use, especially at major intersections like this one. And so what we're proposing is that rather than leave it as commercial, which is not viable, it's not a productive use of the land in terms of the overall long-range land use fabric that the town has in their general plan. A better use would be an equivalently intense, I would argue slightly less intense land use like this, which also has the added benefit of having a softer edge. We don't have things like loading zones and rear alleys and things like that. In my opinion, we've got nicer looking architecture than your typical commercial center. But more importantly, it becomes productive and it helps the commercial enterprises that are in town thrive because a lot of them are struggling. And a good example of that is the Oro Valley Marketplace there at the southwest corner of Oracle and Tangerine. That was developed years ago by a company named Bestar. It was zoned for an actually C2 commercial, which is even more intense. Basically, the strongest commercial zoning that the town has and gave them the most flexibility to basically do whatever they could to make it work from a commercial standpoint. And we all know what happened. They built out some of it. They attracted Walmart. They attracted a theater. They attracted Best Buy, Dick's, Sporting Goods. There were some others. So I think all but the theater and Walmart have left in terms of the anchor tenants. And that's for two reasons. One is Vestar finally said, we've had enough. This is a horribly underperforming center because it just doesn't have enough population to support it in the town of Oro Valley. The new people came in. They raised the rents a little bit, which just kind of put the nail in the coffin. So, of course, if there was a viable, thriving commercial market, those anchors wouldn't have left, and all those stores would have been able to absorb a rent increase. But as it is, the current owners are now proposing a major pivot to repurpose a bunch of the land within that commercial shopping center for a hotel and a couple of true high density apartment complexes, multi-story, with a little bit of retail. But the point is they acknowledge that it's not going to work unless they get more customers in there. So in the grand scheme of things, in the town of Oro Valley, there's just more commercial acreage than is supportable by the population. And that includes the expected population because there's really not much land left to add more residents. From a compatibility and transition standpoint, that's another concern that was brought up at the last neighborhood meeting. And as I said, we view this as an actually softer alternative to the CN zoning. It is same building heights, but we'll have them stepped down so that the ones closest to our nearest neighbors will be single story. And it will be a mix within the development as well. It won't all be, well, there's a single story along the bottom and then all of the rest is two story. The whole thing will be a mix, except for that bottom part, which will all be single. We also will be, as I mentioned, putting in a stronger buffer yard along that southern edge to further buffer our closest neighbors. And we're totally understand that that's the most sensitive edge here because that's where we have adjacent neighbors. And the wildlife corridor that's shown on the Rancho del Cobre plat really doesn't do a whole lot in terms of buffering. So I'm not suggesting that we're relying on that at all. We need to make the softening happen on our site, and that provides that opportunity along that southern edge. From a traffic standpoint, if you compare traffic engineers in America all use pretty much the same guidebook, and in that guidebook they've got a long list of very particular land uses that they use for modeling traffic impacts for new developments, redevelopments, things like that. And so in the last few years, as this particular housing format, the low-slung, spread-out rental house format has come into more and more popularity. They've added that category and based its traffic generation estimates on actual developments around the country. So those numbers are reliable and they're used by traffic consultants. They're also used by municipal traffic engineers such as Oro Valley. So when you compare the traffic generation from a development like this to what would be expected for a comparably sized commercial. So if we took this property and developed it commercially as it's zoned and assumed a reasonable amount of square footage like what's shown on the existing plan, the proposed residential neighborhood will have 50 to 70% less traffic generated than the commercial on a comparably sized parcel. So from a traffic standpoint, the impacts would be less. Of course, the traffic will stay at zero if the decision is made to leave it as commercially zoned open space. But our argument is that's really not the right use for the property. In terms of housing types, I mentioned that a lot of folks are previous homeowners. About half of folks who move into these are actually moving from a more traditional house home ownership situation, but they're moving because they're downsizing, or they want less maintenance, or they look at the housing market and they think, well, this is a very active, inflated, and volatile housing market. Let's cash out of it, take a step back, wait for things to settle down, and then re-enter. But the point is, the majority of folks who live in these neighborhoods can certainly afford to buy homes in the area. They're just choosing not to. What they're choosing is to pay premium rent prices for this atmosphere, which is high quality. It's amenitized. It's safe. The majority of folks who live here are also female, especially young professionals. And that demographic would not be a significant demographic in this sort of housing style if it wasn't proven to be a safe environment. The last thing I'll say is just that the major employers in Oro Valley Hospital among them, have spoken up and said in the past when cases like this come up that one of the major impediments to them attracting new talent to Oro Valley is a lack of housing options. And what they're talking about are those young professionals, not the seasoned doctors and things, but the people coming out of medical school or coming out of college or just looking for a job in Oro Valley who aren't able to live here because the housing options just don't exist. So that's another market segment that this proposal will be filling. And that's all I have to say tonight, but as Mr. Spath said, I'll be around to answer questions.
Can you hear me now? Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Olin, for your presentation. So now we get to the most important point of the evening, of course, is the round robin with questions, comments, and opinions. All right. So first and foremost, for myself, for Mr. Olin, for some of the town staff who are here, we really try and avoid using jargon or acronyms that folks aren't familiar with. So please don't hesitate to raise your hand and let us know that we've said something that is confusing already. Thank you. We will certainly try and rephrase it in another way that is more understandable. We're going to go in a round robin format. Again, tonight we do have folks on Zoom, so please bear with us as we will toggle back and forth to make both audiences feel like they've had the opportunity to have their voices heard. So that's the point of the evening. If you've got more than one question, that's great. We will try and circle back to you if we have time, but try and limit it to one time because I do anticipate we will have a lot of questions and we want to be as fair as possible so folks can ask any questions that they might have. For those of you on Zoom, you'll see the image on the screen here. You will need to raise your computer or iPad generated hand, which is circled in yellow there. So depending on the device that you're on, that hand may be at the top or the bottom of the screen. If you're having trouble with anything, please feel free to contact Ms. Hannah Oden, who's a senior planner with the town, at 229-4814, and she will be able to help you with any issues that you might be having. For those of you that are on phones, you'll have to hit *9 to raise your hand, and I will be tracking that on my little iPad over here. I know folks on Zoom can't see that, but just so you and the audience know, we are tracking their raised hands, so we want to make sure they have the opportunity to be heard as well. Ms. Sims is going to be walking around with a microphone so that folks on Zoom can hear the conversation that we're having here as well. And you'll notice Mr. Packer over here to my right, he's going to be taking notes of all the comments, questions, and opinions that we get. For those of you that were at the first meeting, you saw us doing that. What we're doing that for is we're, one, making sure that we hear and transcribe the comments and questions that we hear. We turn around and turn that into a summary of tonight's meeting that helps formulate staff's recommendation to the commission, and then we send that on to the decision makers at both the commission and council to help inform their decisions as well. And I will note, you folks don't see this, but there are several commissioners online who are listening to the conversation as well, just to hear how the conversation goes. So with that, Ms. Sims. If we could see a show of hands of anybody who has questions. Yes, we can start right here and then work our way back there, sir. And you on Zoom, raise your hands as well if you have questions.
What's that? Okay, thank you, Mr. Owen. And with all due respect, as a consultant, I know you do a good job of politicking here, and you've done a decent sales pitch here. My biggest question and concern with regards to this development and the is Mr. Meyer here tonight?
He's not here.
So somebody from Austin, Texas wants to come in and scrape the land in Oral Valley, and he doesn't have the time to come to visit us. So I want to make that duly noted. At the same time, I also want to point out that when you're going to put a development such as a high density residential next to a low density, and yet the website wasn't updated today, so you have no example. You can show us some pretty architecture plans, but there's no actual example of where you've done this in the past, and you want to use Oral Valley as a guinea pig, and I'm not quite sure that this is the right parcel of land to do that, where there are high-density residential plots in the area to do that. And to just piggyback on that, I don't know if you've read the news, but they're putting massive water cap restrictions in Arizona because we're downhill, but yet your plan calls for a 65% increase in water usage based on the high density versus commercial. So if you could impact or address that in addition to sort of showing us how you've had success in other areas, which you haven't, but how you think that that's going to work here.
Okay. Mr. Roland?
Sure. So thanks for the questions. From a water use standpoint, I don't have a great answer for that, because within the town of Oro Valley, we call Oro Valley Water Utility and say, can you serve this property? And they do some calculations and say, yes, we have supply for that modeled. And they buy credits for alternative sources and all that stuff, which I don't know. But they say, yes, we can serve you. So that's really as far as our involvement goes. It would be more water use than commercial. You're right about that. But we look to them for the adequacy question. In terms of JLM's track record, it is fairly new, but what we know is that the model for this sort of housing product is demonstrated and strong. And so what JLM is doing, and like I said, they've got a number of these going in various stages of approval around the country. They know that if they take that successful model, there's a demonstrated demand for this format of housing that they can improve upon. So the things they're proposing to increase the amenities, to increase the architectural treatments, things like that, wouldn't have a negative impact on that demonstrated model. So they're very confident that this is going to work, which is why they're proposing to build this sort of thing in a number of different markets.
Okay, thank you. And again, I just remind, if folks have follow-up questions that we don't get to, we'll be here afterwards, and we're happy to stay and try and answer those as best we can. So, Ms. Sims?
Yeah, I've got a couple of things. The wildlife corridor, did you say you're going to increase the size of it? And I'm sorry, I'm hearing a
we'll
lot
of we'll let the talk. Applicant answer.
The other thing was, it appears on your drawing or architectural plan that Tangerine Road, which is a very busy road, you're going to narrow it down to put in the left turn lane. And I'm wondering how you're going to do that and keep the traffic flow going. If you're going to widen it, have you actually gotten approval or agreement with the whoever owns that to actually do that work?
Yeah, Mr. Olin, could you answer those two questions, please?
Sure. So the first one, in terms of the wildlife corridor, the town does have that mapped critical resource area up in the northwest corner. The existing zoning preserves that, and so will we, as well as the little piece of non-wildlife corridor up on the very corner. So that's staying the same from existing to proposed. We're not shrinking that down. In terms, that's we're leaving that alone. Yeah. So he was asking about in the Rancho del Cobre plat, there's a strip of land that's labeled wildlife corridor, I wasn't involved in that. I don't see a whole lot of use for that, but as a wildlife corridor. But that's not the land that JLM is proposing to purchase, and that won't be touched. So the question about tangerine, we're not skinnying tangerine. All we're doing with tangerine is connecting up to where that existing curb stub out exists today. So there's no other modifications, but we're certainly not skinnying it down. And it's owned by the town. Tangerine's owned by Oro Valley.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Olin. And before we have your question, I'm just going to remind folks on Zoom, if you've got a question, please raise your hand. So thank you.
Thanks for the way that you framed the lack of population to support the commercial zoning right now. I think that was a helpful place to start, and particularly in light of what you are trying to accomplish. Where I think I lost you was after that, it sounded as if it was framed as a binary choice, that given that situation, the choice was either we let the land stay vacant because no commercial project is going to go in there, or we put in high-density rental. And that's where I think I lost you, because isn't it just as easy, if you're going to amend the general plan, to amend that commercial to low-density or medium-density residential? So it's not rental. It's not high density butting up against low density, but it does the least violence to everyone's settled expectations for when they bought their property in a lower medium residential area, knowing that there could be commercial development, but certainly not high density rental.
Sure. No, that's
okay.
Fair.
Mr. Olin?
Yeah, so it would be the same process to amend the general plan and the zoning to a lower density residential. What JLM is proposing and what the property owner is supporting is an application to put in higher density, which is in alignment with the town's growth area that's existing at that intersection. So in our opinion, and I think in the general plans, in the general plan map, there's an acknowledgement that a more intense land use is appropriate here, and that's demonstrated by the existing land use designation as well as the existing commercial zoning. So you're absolutely right. Somebody could come in and propose that, but that's not what we're proposing, because we think this is a better use of the property.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Rowland. Yep. Teal shirt and then over to the right there, and we'll come over here, sir.
Hi. That's our hello. A couple things. First, if it's wags its tail like a dog, looks like a dog, and barks like a dog, it is. And these are apartments. Let's get that clear. These are not houses. 650 square foot apartments are not a home. That said, we've got we've got about 50 feet between our homes right now in our neighborhood designed low density. There's over 30 feet between the fences of our homes. You're proposing this first complex or first building is 20 feet off of our fence in the backyard. We happen to be along that southern front. So, I mean, it's just, it doesn't even fit with the plans. You know, you're saying this is the original owner, the same owner that built Rancho Del Cobra or owned the property. We did have an agreement with them when we did all this, and that was for the soft commercial. And you've kind of laughed off the wildlife corridor along there, which you've got down to 20 feet. I don't know how you're going to plan enough landscape to cover anything, but that was over 100 feet. The original design gives over 100 feet because the coyotes, the bobcat, the quail, the dove, everything that goes through there, the deer, the javelina, is important. It's important to Oro Valley. It's important to our vision. The views of the mountains are important. That is what Oro Valley is about. It's just not the right place for a high-density apartment complex, which is what this is. No matter what face you put on it, it is a transitory group. People that are in and out, have no ownership, of Oro Valley. So it's just it's not the same situation. It's not the right. The commercial is a really good design for that area.
I do want to also make clear that when we purchased the house 3.5 years ago, on our paperwork, it shows that there is a 100-foot wildlife corridor, not a 20-foot. And I see the change that you made where you kept the 20 feet and then you added a grand 8 feet to add some plantings. It shows bushes, from what I can tell, on your plan. You haven't solidified anything that says that that's going to be a big buffer for the people that are going to that have purchased. We're sitting on, most of us are sitting on million-dollar homes, and then in 20 feet plus 8 feet of plantings, we're going to have apartment complexes that I don't know what the single story ones are. Are they 1, 2, or 3 bedroom?
It's a mix.
Pardon?
It's a mix.
It's a mix. Okay. So you've at least said that those are going to be single story, but that isn't that much. When we purchased in a property that in a neighborhood that provided separation and a sense of
privacy.
And you guys aren't even offering a wall for privacy. You're going to put little plants in and say that's the buffer.
And cut that down from over sure. 100 feet to 20 feet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Rowland, is there anything you would like to touch in there?
Just a question, really. I mean, so when we approach the site planning process from the beginning, the first thing we do is put together a constraints map. That's all of the physical and regulatory constraints that we can find through research and observation that affect a property's developability. So on this property, I don't know if we can get the site plan
right
back
there.
Up.
Here's the clicker.
Oh, sorry. It wasn't working last night, so I'm... it's kind of hard to see, but what the information that we were going off of was, if you look here, there's actually two lines. Behind these homes, you see there's a light line that parallels our southern property boundary. I don't know if everybody can see that or not. Anyway, there is one. That's about 25 feet off of our property line. So that 25 feet that's not within our property, that's identified on the Del Cobre plat as a wildlife corridor. That's what I was referring to. So that's off-site for us. On-site, we are proposing to meet Oro Valley's landscape buffer yard standards, which would be 20 feet on-site as well, and that would be landscaped. We wouldn't be touching anything within that first 25. So it's not 100, but what we are proposing is close to 50. But that said, where I started this was to say that it's based on all the information that we can find. So I'm really curious about the document you mentioned that talks about 100 foot. So, if I could get that from you to see what that is, I mean, if there's really a commitment that applies to this property that that has already designated more feet along the southern edge, then...
Why are you saying an added 20 foot when on the paperwork that was on the Oro Valley site, it shows that you're adding an 8 foot? I mean, you're saying 25 and then another 20 to 25. You're a little unclear with that, and you just said that it would be closer to 50 feet, but it's not showing that. It's showing 20 foot and then an 8 foot.
And it doesn't show the 25 feet you're talking about that's staying natural.
It's there, and if you want to come up afterwards, look at it more closely. But I'm not sure where the 8 foot came from. We're proposing 20 in addition to that existing 25 feet.
Why have you guys not considered a wall like all the properties around here have for privacy and security?
Would that be meaningful? I mean, I'd be happy to consider that. What we thought would be most effective, because the homes along that edge already have rear walls, would be to add more vegetation. But we could do
we're
both.
We're separated. We have walls, yeah. But then we have separation. So anybody from that apartment complex could walk right into the our property without a wall.
And sure. Folks, so
and that
I mean,
was brought up before.
Sure, and I don't mean to cut you off by any means, but wanted to try and make sure everybody has a chance. So if you guys can come up afterwards, absolutely, we can take a closer look. I do have one person with a question on Zoom, so we'll come back to you guys. I just want to be fair to the folks on Zoom. So, Carlos, could I get Mr. Mark Drew unmuted, please? And, of course, make sure that you are unmuted on your end. Are you there, sir?
Yeah, you can hear me?
We can hear you. Go right ahead.
Okay, well, I'll just first of all say... the walls at the back of our house, that it's view fencing. I live on the south edge, so that's incorrect. On page 7 of your statement, you said that the surrounding houses vary between 1 and 2 stories. I'll agree that the houses over the road, over La Cholla, are 2 stories. I walk my dog. I don't see 2 stories on our block. So I don't think, I think that's disingenuous to say that the houses are 2 stories. The first house I saw is in Virch, which is about a quarter of a mile away. There's roughly about 200 houses. They're all single story. So I'd like to ask Mr. Olin what percentage of the houses he proposes to build are 2 stories. Presumably, they're all 2 stories, bar the ones on the southern border. And also, with regard to the view shed, I don't understand how you can take a picture in one area. I can see the mountains. If you build 2 stories pretty much on the rest of the houses, that's going to destroy my view. I don't just look out 180 degrees from my house. My neck turns. So if you could address that, please.
Sure. Thank you very much, Mr. Drew. Mr. Rowland.
Sure.
Dr. Drew.
Sure. So I guess the first thing is I really didn't understand the question about the view fencing.
So I think Mr. Drew's point was that he lives in Rancho del Cobre south of this development, and he's got view fencing. And so he was curious when you walked around and said, or not you, when you put in the site analysis that you thought there were 2 stories to the south in Rancho del Cobre, that he thought that was disingenuous.
Sure.
He thought it was in Rancho del Plata, not del Cobre. I think sure. If I understood.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, understood. So, I don't think it says in there that there's any 2-story homes in Rancho del Cobre. The site analysis requirements go out about a quarter mile, 1,000 feet to a quarter mile, so that's the area that we typically look at in terms of what's considered nearby in the site analysis. So within that context, which is the way it's been for many years, there are a mix of 1 and 2s, but certainly not suggesting that there's 2 stories to the south in Rancho del Cobre. In terms of the mix, like I said before, it won't be all 2 stories except for the 1 stories along the southern edge. It would be, of course, the single-story restriction along the southern edge, but then within it, it would also be a mix of 1 and 2s. I don't have the percentage right now. That would be something that the JLM is still working out. They do market studies to determine what would be the ideal target for folks in terms of family size, percentage of single people that they're expecting within this particular market. They're working that out, so that would really drive the ultimate mix. But we are committing, of course, to that single-story restriction on the south.
Okay, thank you. Yes, in the back, and then we'll come over to this side of the room.
Hi, yeah, so first things first, Michael, I wanted to give you a petition here. So there's 380 okay. names on this. So, 40 in this room, multiply that by 10 in terms of people who are opposed to the general plan amendment.
Sure.
The next thing I just wanted to, just very quickly, I have 2 more points to make, and I'll make them quick. So the next one, the first thing I noticed is you called our community, which is called Rancho del Cobre, you called us Ironwood Ranch. So, yeah, perhaps a benign typo, but I tend to think it also reflects just the level of stakeholder engagement you're actually applying to the project, mislabeling the community directly south of your development. And then lastly, to me, honestly, I find it kind of frustrating sitting in here listening. We're forced to sit here and squabble about wall heights, where the entrances will be, where the pool's going to go. To me, that's smoke and mirrors over the really the fundamental question here, right, which is this general plan amendment. So we have a general plan. It's essentially the agreement that the town and the voters have with our town council and our local government, and that was agreed on in 2016. So let's talk about changing that now, right? So, Mr. Oland, and I understand your motives. I don't fault you for that at all. You're doing your job, but you come in and you're looking to change that general plan. So I'm not really hearing any reasons why the folks engaged in this planning process, i.e. the people who live there, the constituents or the council would actually go along with this, right? And what I heard at the beginning, Michael, you mentioned that the onus is on Mr. Oland to make this case, right? Mm-hmm. So, the fundamental argument I keep hearing, Paul, is that the residential density is not adequate to support that site as a commercial site. And, so I'm an engineer. I work with numbers, and I haven't seen any numbers. I haven't seen any assessment. And frankly, I don't believe it. So there's development. There's hundreds of houses going in that quadrant. I don't believe you when you say that site will never be viable for commercial development. And what I would say is, prove it to us. So I read through your site assessment, and there's nothing in there. So all we're getting is these highfalutin statements at the beginning of these sessions that seek to justify this change. You know, it's the fundamental question, and it's not being addressed. And we're forced to sit here and look at, whatever these cartoons are. It's a waste of time. So, that's my comments. And, I don't know if anyone from town council is here, but I would certainly, I don't know when in this process we get to hear from council but I would be very disappointed and I would lose faith in our leadership if someone can come in externally, make some general statements around our general plan, which was certainly based on data 4 or 5 years ago, and then, basically get a change implemented. That would really, to me, undermine the whole process. There's a reason we have a general plan, right? And it's to support us when we go to make decisions like this. So, we're really flying in the face of this plan right now. We're 2 hours into these meetings where we're not really addressing that issue, and I suppose that's on Mr. Oland, to justify this, as you mentioned at the beginning. So, not really a question. I'm not really looking for you to increase the offset or tell me about the roof lines, the architecture, how many people are in each house. Again, smoke and mirrors. We have a general plan. What are the reasons that we would change that plan? And I'm just not hearing any. So sure. That's all I got.
Sure. Thanks. Did you want to address any of that?
Sure. Yeah, no, I'll respond to that, of course. So the general plan, of course, is there's a major amendment every 10 years by state statute. It also includes provisions for revision when it's shown to be a reasonable amendment. So the last few years have been really rough on retail with COVID and with more e-commerce. Amazon has flourished. Those are all true statements. But numbers, we got lots of numbers. I would be happy to get you lots of numbers that show, that demonstrate that the commercial viability here is basically zero. So if you want to swing by on the way out, I can get your contact info and send it to you.
Sure, we can put it on the project webpage as well, so everybody can see it. Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you. So, Hi, Paul. Mike, we met like 5 minutes ago. So, I just wanted to ask, and it's kind of a follow-up, because earlier you mentioned that you felt like no matter what alternative, so if we didn't go to high-density residential, you said, it would be the same type of amendment. And I think there's a slight correction to that. And part of that being, and I'm sure you've read the general plan thoroughly, you've been doing this a while, our general plan actually necessitates a type 1 amendment when we reduce neighborhood commercial offering, right? Because we really don't have a ton of NCO zoned currently. We have our main area, like you talked about, right, which is for, just like some of the areas you talked to, but we've only designated a couple of spots for this NCO type. And it was so small of an area that the town specifically put a provision that elimination of that on its own, regardless of what type, would require a Type 1 amendment. And then secondarily, because of the vision of how we see our town and we see the makeup of where those are, the high-density residential was designated in specific spots, and any further extension of that also on its own would require a Type 1 amendment. And so I think for me, part of my question, and this even may slightly be for Michael and the town, is partly why is this even being considered as its own singular thing? Why, for example, would it not first be a consideration that you would have to propose something to reduce neighborhood commercial to, let's say, something that doesn't require a Type 1 change, such as like low-density residential, given the fact that the owner of the property already developed most of it for low-density residential. And then, if that was not viable at that point, propose, again, yet a second Type 1 amendment to increase high-density residential. So what would warrant that two-factor, essentially, you know, change?
So if I understand...
Mr. Roland, please go ahead.
Sure. If I understand your question, is why would we go from NCO, neighborhood commercial office, directly to high density without first trying low density first?
Yes, as a town, I'm talking about.
Sure. Well, I guess that is a better question
so
for the town.
I can answer that from our perspective. So we are required by state statute to provide due diligence. So we don't have it set up in our general plan that you have to do, as you proposed, only go a couple of steps, right? So a property owner can request anything that is allowed, right?
I mean, we could request a toxic waste dump, admittedly, but right. I'm just getting more of a, like,
well, right,
and this may be something for the town council that could be noted as a concern.
So, hold on, if I could finish answering, if you don't mind. So the point at the end of the day is we react to what town council and commission have their own decisions to make based on that general plan. But we as the town and as the staff members who are responsible for charged with reviewing those, we don't get to pick and choose. So if it's submitted to us, we have a legal obligation to process it. Now, we get to make a determination on what our recommendation to Planning and Zoning Commission can be, right? But we do have to process it outright, no doubt. I hope that answers that part of the question.
Yeah, I think that helps a little bit, and I think part of it is mainly, even if it would be noted for the council, I think there's earlier, and again, not to say it was disingenuous, but I think you stated specifically it would be the same type of change if we went from a neighborhood commercial offering to low density, but again, I don't think it's quite the same type of change, just given how we've outlined those parameters within the general plan.
Sure, right? And what I meant when I said that was that it would also require a general plan amendment and a rezoning.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's all I meant.
Yeah, and again, I know it's a subtlety, but I think it's a really important subtlety given the fact that, again, the voters backed those provisions and considered those individually to be large enough changes to warrant a Type 1 amendment. But thank you.
Yeah. And Ms. Sims, we do have one individual on Zoom that has raised their hand. So, Carlos, could we please have Steve unmuted, and then we'll go back to the back of the room there. Steve, please make sure you're unmuted on your end. Okay. Are you there, sir?
Yes. Good afternoon. Thank you guys for taking my call.
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Look, so it seems like a very good presentation for what I'm seeing. And I have a lot of compassion for the homeowners that are within the corridor. I'm a resident of Oro Valley as well. So what I'm asking here is that would it be a compromise? Because I know views, wildlife are critical to the attraction of Oro Valley. And two and three stories, especially in a corner site, I seems to be enormous taken or token on the homeowners there in that corridor. Would the proposed individual that's looking to build here relook at a single story, or are there other sites that they may potentially look more inroad as opposed to being in the corner? And let us understand that Oro Valley, with the main corridor, the artery of Tangerine widening, changed the landscape of the area significantly. So for individuals living off the areas, unfortunately, they're going to be in an area where they need to either maybe relocate or accept the conditions where did the widening of Tangerine bring in a large amount of traffic.
Okay, thank you for your question, sir. Mr. Yep. Roland, did you have any comments on the single-story restriction?
Sure. Well, I guess what I'm hearing is it's not so much a discussion about one-story versus two-story. It's about having a neighborhood of people who are renting nearby. I think that's kind of the bigger concern that I'm hearing. So I'm not sure that making it all one story would make much difference. But that's if it would, okay. That's certainly something we would look at. But I'd love to hear somebody actually tell me that that would be a meaningful change.
Okay, thank you. Sir in the teal shirt back there and then the woman in the red.
Just a point of clarification. You indicate at the beginning of the presentation that there are modifications have been made to the placement of the two stories. And it might just be me because I'm old and I can't see. But I'm looking at your plot drawing. I have absolutely no idea where your two stories are going to be. And I understand what you're saying about the south border. I'm interested in the southeast border and the east border. And at what point along in this process are people going to see what your real intent is? Where are the two-story houses going to be?
Sure. So, you know, as part of the rezoning process, there's a refining of the site plan. There's also things that are going on in the background, like I mentioned, the market study to figure out what mix of units is best for this site, given its vicinity. But the things that we can commit to during the rezoning are restrictions on certain portions of the property. So when we were looking at this, we realized, of course, very obviously, that we have several neighbors right up against our southern boundary. It makes a lot of sense for us to restrict those. When we looked at the other boundaries, we saw two large arterial roads and then several hundred feet of wash area. So we weren't looking at the eastern boundary, which I think maybe is what you're referring to, as an area where restricting those to single story would have a meaningful benefit because it's so far away from the nearest neighbors. So that was our thinking there. So in terms of where the two stories will be, I don't know yet. I mean, that's not atypical. When a subdivision comes in to the town for approval, a typical standard subdivision, where the two stories are going to go isn't known. I mean, unless there's a restriction or a commitment on behalf of the developer, like there was with Marikay here, they said, well, we've got large enough lots. We can deliver the home products that we know will be desirable to people in this area on a single story, because people certainly desire a single story if they can get the square footage that they want without adding a second story. But in subdivisions where there is a mix, that's not determined at the rezone stage unless there's certain areas that are outright restricted. That's really determined even after the platting stage when they're selling homes. Then Oro Valley, as they're processing permits, will come in and say, okay, well, we've got these rules that say you can't have more than two in a row. Your corner lots have to be single story, things like that. And that's when those standard code-based restrictions are implemented. But again, at this stage, we can commit to certain areas being restricted outright.
Thank you, Mr. Rowland. Ma'am?
Hi. I actually have some concerns about this development sort of in general, about how all of the things that are being proposed right now to the town kind of work into this. So we're not just talking about the 90 that were here, but we're talking about the parcel across the street, which I understand this team is going to come to a proposal with for about 250 units, is my guess, with that size of 20 acres.
That one is, it's also JLM, so it's part of one big vision here.
Yeah.
That will be a separate application.
Right, but how many units are you looking at?
I don't know yet. We're working on that. We did make the application. I just don't remember what the number is.
Okay.
Well, I don't think it's 250, but it's also not the entire piece.
But it's roughly 20 acres. So, you know, based on the math, that's probably going to work out to be about 200 units or so. There's also a Vilo Rancho Vistoso, which is proposed to be 215 units. There's the Oro Valley Marketplace, which will end up with somewhere between 500 and 700 units. And in addition, the Capella pad that's actually just down the road from this, there are parcels there that are right now currently zoned, and you could go and build 400 units on those two parcels right now. So that brings us to a total of 1,500 total units being added to the Oro Valley Market in a matter of probably 3 years. And I don't know if this is the same study that you were talking about earlier, but there was a 2020 study, apartment study, that was done, I think, in preparation for Oro Valley Marketplace, that said that there are currently 3,000 apartment units right now in Oro Valley, and that the anticipated growth of town is 200 to 400 households, and that's all types of homes. So just to put all of those things together, that means that you would add, in total, all of the things that are right now sitting on the plate of the town, that's 1,500 units. That's an additional 50% above what we have now. And that then occupies all the intended growth and all of the anticipated growth in Oro Valley for the next 4 to 7 years. And I just don't think that all of that development is responsible. It's not a responsible decision on the town's part. So I really feel like the town needs to prioritize. They need to pick the projects that are going to give this town and this community the biggest bang for its buck. And honestly, this is not it. You're putting a community in a place where the closest grocery store is 2 miles away in Marana. You're putting a community where the density is going to contribute more to the revitalization efforts of the Foothills Mall and to the development of the northeast side of Marana than you are Oro Valley Marketplace. This just does not make sense for what this town wants. There are other opportunities. There are other projects that we should focus our time and effort on.
Okay, thank you. So I go to the white shirt, and then this gentleman right here also had a question. So your pick.
Yes. One of my main concerns is the ongoing maintenance of this project. This complex. We have subdivisions surrounding this complex, which are maintained through HOAs, which is governed by the members within the HOA, which are the property owners. In this complex, the owner is going to have the sole discretion of maintenance, background checks, things like that. So if profits and other priorities take the place of maintenance, the complex is going to go downhill. And it might be well-intended in the beginning, but things can change. The corporate objectives of the complex owner may change, and they may sell this in 2 or 3 years. And whoever gets it is going to be probably the highest bidder, and they may not take the care they need to ensure that the complex remains viable and in good repair.
Okay. Thank you for your comments, Mr. Rowland.
Sure. I mean, I guess I understand what you're saying. I think the fact of the matter is that this is going to cost a lot of money to purchase and a lot of money to develop, and there's going to be a significant investment in this property, if you think of it as a single asset, just like, you know, you think of your house as an asset, right? And so your house is a significant asset. You're going to maintain it because you don't want its value to decrease. It's the same thing here. JLM is making a significant investment that they don't want to see decrease in value either. So they're incentivized to maintain it at a high quality, which leads to higher resident satisfaction, which leads to increased rents, and that cycle works up. And I totally understand what you're saying. You know, people have seen for many years that rental complexes, you know, mostly typical apartments, can trend downward over the years in places that are blighted. I mean, Oro Valley is on an upward trajectory. We have strong property values here, and this is a growth area. So the concern that the owner of this project would just let their large investment fizzle away through lack of maintenance, I don't see that happening, because that's not what people do. I mean, when they have a big investment, they want to keep it from losing value.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Rowland. And well, right here in the white, and then we'll go back to you, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Marie, and I live in Rancho del Cobre. I agree with my husband on this one. We don't agree on everything, but just like him, I oppose a rezone. There's five reasons for that. The first one is the current zoning of community commercial is only at 3.9% in Oro Valley, so it's not a high number. Number two is that corner of Choi and Tangerine is actually a tier two level commercial. So it's not any type of commercial area. There's only four corners in the town of Oro Valley that's been designated tier two. It makes it special. It also makes it so that the city council requires one more vote to make that change, because it is a change, it's a significant change to our Oro Valley guidelines, our plan. So we're not talking about just changing any commercial lot to high-density housing. We're talking about changing a tier two area, and I think that is very important to note. Number three is we already have lots designated high-density housing, high-density residential available in Oro Valley. Like Mary mentioned earlier, there's actually 95 acres of available land to build this. Why not choose one of those parcels? Four, this goes completely against our vision and guiding principles. This is directly from our document. This is from an Oro Valley document. We want to preserve scenic beauty and environment and provide more services nearby. Five, this is me on the personal note. We chose Oro Valley to raise our son because we want an area that was quiet, close to nature. We want services. We bought a house in this community knowing services weren't going to come in. We wouldn't have purchased if we knew that high-density housing would have come in. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rowland, did you have anything you'd like to address there?
Sure. I mean, a couple things. So Oro Valley's general plan does have 3.8% designated for commercial use. That I think, is high. If you compare that to Scottsdale's general plan, Scottsdale's general plan has about 1.5% designated to commercial. I know, but just as a point of reference, they've got a lot more density around them, and they can support more commercial, and yet they have less than half as much designated for long-term commercial use. The Tier 2 growth area is that's correct. This is a growth area, but that doesn't necessarily equate to commercial use. That equates to a higher intensity use, which could include something like this. So this request is compatible with that Tier 2 designation. 95 acres of HDR land available. So just a couple things there. One is not all of them are for sale right now, but there is a huge demand for this kind of housing. So one option is to find properties that are for sale that are good fits for this kind of housing, and that's why we're here tonight, because in our opinion, this is a good fit. The other thing about, I believe that the 95 acres of commercial of high-density residential you're talking about, if you look at those parcels individually, a lot of them are very small, and they accumulate to a large. There are a few larger ones in there, but a lot of them are small enough that this housing product really doesn't work on them. So it just wouldn't make sense to propose on those. And then I guess the idea of knowing that services would come in someday is certainly a hope. We all want services nearby. But like I said before, I don't think that's going to happen on this property. And what I told your husband is true. We can provide lots of numbers and a report, which actually isn't the 2020 report. It's brand new. And I think if you updated the 2020 report, I know I'm answering another question, but I think you'd probably find that the housing market has shifted since 2020, and there's more demand for rental homes now than there was 2 years ago.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rowland. Ma'am?
Hi. Thank you. Paul, I appreciate that you're here, and this is the second meeting that I've been to. I was hopeful that we would hear some things that addressed our concerns from the last meeting. We heard a couple of things, but none of us really remembered those things that you addressed as being said in the first meeting. Well, I can't say none of us. I can't speak for everyone. What you did bring up, though, that was different was Vestar. And I'm not sure how many of you were here when Vestar was proposing Oro Valley Marketplace. I have a family relative who was very much part of trying not to have Oro Valley Marketplace be built here. I heard him every day as he went to the meetings, as he talked to the town council, as he tried to express how very important it was to not let Vestar come and build Oro Valley Marketplace, because they brought in Walmarts, because they brought in Targets, because we didn't have the population to support it. Just like you said, Vestar did exactly what you're doing. And they made promises, and they brought up numbers, and all these important things. And my father, that was the person, was frustrated along with the group of people that he tried to fight desperately from the town council making this mistake. And you made the argument that my father tried to make when Oro Valley Marketplace built in, which is, it's going to destroy a lot of the roadmap that's already here. We don't have the population to support it. Here's what it's going to do. But Vestar made so many promises. We're not going to do that. Trust us. We're going to be different. And here we are with you making the exact same argument that Vestar made. And here we are to all witness what Oro Valley Marketplace is now. So then help us and go to Oro Valley Marketplace and make your situation there. But please, Oro Valley Town Council, do not make the same mistake that so many people tried to like tell everybody about when that went in. And that is all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anything?
Well, just for clarification, so it sounds like I'm making the same argument your dad did, right? That there's not enough rooftops to support that much commercial?
No, it was to please town council, don't bring Vestar in because they will do ABC to destroy this community. Now, they haven't destroyed this community, but Vestar promised things differently than what people were trying to say. They promised things differently. We have the numbers. No, we're not going to do that. We're different. Our investors care. Let's provide people in the surrounding communities breakfast so that we can interest them, and we're going to be different. You're saying we're going to be different. We care about the community. We're not going to let it go after 3 years. We're going to be different than everybody else. That's the argument that Vestar made that you're making now. And Vestar now is an eyesore and something that isn't good. They made the same promises that you made, and it failed. And now we're Oro Valley. All the people that are left here are having to drive by with a development that was hideously designed in the first place for anybody that goes there, right? We should have known. Oro Valley Town Council should have known. But they made a decision that really was, oh, great, it sounds great. Please, this is not the time to approve this on the fly with all the other things going on. We do not want, especially on an inroad
right
to Oro Valley where people see it, right?
Sure. Yep.
So
and
you're not.
Thank you for your comment. We've got it down.
Thank you.
Absolutely. We've got about 10 minutes left. Are there other hands? I guess I should check Zoom. Nobody there. Anybody else who hasn't asked a question yet? All right. The three who have asked questions. Oh, actually, we do have one. Go ahead, ma'am. Sorry.
I just have a personal one. Sorry for that. When you bought your property, because it was on the outside, surrounding, overlooking the open area, did you pay an extra premium price for that property? Yes.
Well,
so
we knew that it would that it had the potential.
But it was a one-story potential.
Well,
it was
space,
a one-story.
We would
so
we'd yeah still see the mountains.
Right, and there would be a larger corridor. Yes, we did.
So then, is that same developer coming back within 3 years?
Yeah. Trying to change it.
And trying to change what he charged extra for.
Commitment
That's what I don't understand.
No. Yeah, no.
Mr. Olin.
Yeah, so I wasn't involved in that, but I do know that when Maricay built that subdivision, whatever they charged for the houses, whatever view premiums they charged, those weren't things that the property owner here had anything to do with. So I guess there's a little disconnect there, because there's no tie between those two, and I have no idea what Maricay said.
So I'm confused. I thought it was the same property owner. Am I not correct?
So the property owner who owned the Maricay subdivision sold it to Maricay. So it was not the property owner who owns this piece who charged the lot premiums. It was Maricay. That's what Mr. Olin, I believe, is trying to explain.
But that was because there was an agreement of what was going to be there, what was going to be built, and the views that we're going to have. And I did only have one other thing.
Sure. Yeah, go right ahead.
You brought it up, and I meant to say this earlier about the traffic. With the commercial, with the original proposed design, that's daytime traffic. That's during business hours. What you're proposing, besides the number of people and coming in and out, that's a 24/7 thing, especially in apartments. As you pointed out, young single people, they're in and out, in and out. That's 24/7. So your traffic situation is not just in the small corridor. It's going to be 24/7. So you're creating a lot more traffic on that corner with this type of development.
And noise.
Mr. Rowland?
Well, in terms of raw numbers daily, it's a lot less traffic, but it is spread out. So you are going to have fewer cars. I mean, less than half as many trips entering and leaving the property. It's true. I mean, we can look at the numbers. But entering and leaving the property under a development scenario like this than under a development scenario like what's shown in the approved plan. But you're right. I mean, the commercial one will have a peak, especially during the weekdays, that coincides with business hours and lunchtime and rush hours. The peak that's associated with a residential development isn't much different than a traditional single-family subdivision. It will be more spread out. There will be trips beyond typical business hours. There's still a peak at each rush hour that lines up pretty similarly with commercial traffic, but overall, every day, it's less and it's more spread out.
Okay, right here, Ms. Sims, and then we'll come over to you.
So the only question I would have, and this is probably not for you, Mr. Owen, but more for JLM, let's be honest, they're a private equity investment firm. Their job is to make money. So I would like to know what their timeline is for the return on investment. They're going to come in and scrape the land. You're going to build 90 transient rental properties here, and you're going to turn around and flip that to a management company within a number of years. So how many years are JLM expecting to receive a profit? Because unless you're telling me that the owner of JLM is going to build his forever home here and going to live in this community, which I don't think is probably going to happen, I think you owe it to the community that you're going to turn and flip this property in a couple of years for a profit, because that's what their job is. You need to let us know what that is, because then you're going to leave us in a couple of years with a management company that doesn't care, that's not invested, and it's not their investment anymore that they're trying to take care of and grow and profit from, because they already sold it and they made their money and they're back in Texas. So please let us know what that turnaround is so that we can expect to sell our homes and get out of here before the community turns to trash.
Okay, thank you. And our final question over there, sir.
Just a clarification, but I was curious. Did you mention that that JLM is also trying to, or has not yet submitted, a proposal to change the north side of Tangerine also from NCO to high density residential? Did I hear that right or no?
Yeah, so on the northeast corner of Tangerine and La Cholla here, there's a larger commercial piece that includes some C1 commercial and some CN commercial. So Oro Valley has CN, it's kind of their lowest commercial, then C1 is a middle range, and the C2 is like Vestar. So that one has a couple different designations, and JLM is also proposing to change kind of a swath through the middle of that to provide basically another phase of this community here. We're preserving the C1 corner because we believe that could be viable someday, especially once there are a lot more residents within walking distance. And then there's a little piece that's kind of separated off by a large wash that I think would make a good office, and it's physically disconnected from the rest, so we're leaving that too.
Just a small question then, I just wanted to make sure I heard that right earlier. Why is that rezoning not part of the entire picture that you're giving the town to allow the town council to vote on this larger change? Why was that split into two phases?
It's two separate parcels, so it necessarily has to be two different applications. This one procedurally was months ahead of the other one because of the general plan amendment requirement. There's not such a requirement up there because it's mixed use.
From C1, not NC.
Because it's a mixed use up there, and so there's no general plan requirement. This one, the general plan had an April submittal deadline, but there wasn't one up there. So we moved forward more quickly with this one, and we just finished the application for that one, which is probably online now for the north side. Perhaps it's up there soon.
Nope.
It's not up
yet. Not yet. Nope. It's still a pre-application, so.
You're right, but there is a site plan that's going to be showing up online soon.
Oh, okay. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
When that would be.
We'll have a neighborhood meeting up there when we get a little further down the line, and we have a little, some of these details worked out. But to your point, we'll show the whole picture just for that context.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for your time. There's no other questions, right? I haven't seen any other hands up. Oh, I had to ask. No, just kidding. All good. Yep, there's one there, and then you, ma'am.
This just goes back to the first meeting. Somebody asked the question, because these are high-end luxury rental homes, what the rents are going to start at, and that was never answered. So at this point in time, you should have an answer for that.
Mr. Rowland?
What's the range?
I actually don't have an answer for that right now. I will reinforce to JLM that they need to finish those numbers, and then we can distribute that information.
Go right ahead.
Thank you. Just a bottom line comment. Where we moved from in December, we lived four blocks away from a rental complex that became very blighted and very crime-ridden. It was on a major arterial like Tangerine and La Cholla, and it kept going downhill and downhill, and that was a major influencing factor in our decision to leave that area. Bottom line, we do not want a rental community in our community of single-family homes.
Okay, thank you. Your comment is noted. So before I close up here, I have kind of an odd request. Is Paul Bowers or Marcia or Marcia Bowers here, or does anybody know them by chance? You do? They left a book here last meeting in April. Would you mind taking it to them? I didn't have any way of getting a hold of them, so thank you very much. All right, so just to sum up tonight, I think we've got enough unanswered questions at this point that we will be scheduling a third neighborhood meeting, and we are going to ask that Mr. Olin try and answer as many of those questions that we have still outstanding. So the commercial viability, the wildlife corridor stuff, hopefully JLM can get some stuff on the rents. So obviously this project is still moving forward, but we will have another opportunity for folks to come and discuss the project with us. And we understand that not everybody's going to agree on all certain things, and everybody's entitled to their opinion. We want to make sure that you feel that you had the opportunity to make your voice heard. And when we do move forward with the commission and council process, those, again, are public hearings as well. So everybody who wants to speak will be able to fill out a blue card and have a three-minute conversation with commission and council about how you feel about the project. So thank you again. Please check ovprojects.com, because we will add some of that information that Mr. Olin referenced for you guys to go take a look at.
Because this is a Zoom meeting, tonight's meeting as well as our presentations are also going to be posted on that webpage, so council members or commission members who couldn't be here tonight can go back and watch it. Or if you've got friends who couldn't be here tonight and you want them to be able to view it, please send them to ovprojects.com. So thank you again, and we'll be around if you have other questions. Have a good night.